Welcome to The Ether. Today is Tuesday, February 22nd, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra, and it's the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol, and it's refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes and check them out online at WeFund.app. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, taking it downstream. Water, crypto, and boots on the ground. The space was hosted by Cloud, at CloudU Network, Ogallala Life, and EcoToken. Let's take a listen.
Hey, everybody. Sorry, I'm a little behind here.
Hey.
All right.
How are we doing?
Good. I was putting up a chicken coop, and I was a little behind.
I did.
Putting up stuff.
I was thinking it was a time zone problem, but don't worry about it. I heard from Aqua on Juno guy. He has a sick child and so cannot be here. We will reschedule. That's all right. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, dude. I mean, we can talk about stuff right now if you want. We got a lot of people coming. We're going to flood in here. Hey, Tricky. Oh, man. EcoToken's here, man. So, unfortunately, guys, Aqua and Juno's got some situations that are, we can take questions from Water, and Aqua on Juno was in the lobby, even with Tricky. He was on the IBC gang call, the space, and he was introducing himself, and I got to learn a little bit about what is going on with him. And I want to hear your perspective on it, Ogallala. It might be two different approaches in, you know, the way we think about water and we think about water conservation, or you want to think about, you know, I want to kind of get what you think about how your approach is on water and maybe the tokenization of water, because we did talk about maybe there's some issues and
Cool. Yeah. So I've got a bunch of questions for him. I don't know enough about the project to say much one way or another. I do get very concerned about the idea of tokenizing water. And so the part of the world I'm in is we're on the High Plains Aquifer, the Ogallala. And in Texas, it's privately owned, and abstraction, you know, like turning groundwater and taking it out of its ecological health context is what got us in this problem in the first place. And so the idea of just like turning a property right for water into a tokenized property right doesn't sound like a solution to me. Now, that said, there are water markets where this isn't true. And so like the American West, we have these prior appropriations schema, and the blockchain immutability, accountability, and transparency would be huge because there's very little accountability right now. And so this is kind of the problem. And that is, like, what is good for one region isn't what is good for another. I mean, that's true, like, even of a specific location. Like, it depends, you know, what... It's just complicated. But anyway.
Yeah, I wanted to... Since I got to talk to Aqua for a little bit, and he got to, you know, share his project, you know, his is... he's doing water wells and drilling and stuff. And he's going to be, you know, taking people on those trips. And he said he's worked for nonprofits for, I mean, a long time. I said, you know, if I remember correctly, he said 40 years. I don't know if it was 40 or four. But he said it was, you know, he's been working in nonprofits for quite some time. And it's just kind of like, you know, this thing he's trying to do. And he has projects going on doing water wells, and he talks about drilling. What is your take on that? And, like, you know, for water conversation, water conservation purposes, and this is not necessarily, like, you know, for America. Oh, you know,
right.
Yeah.
Right. It's tricky because I'm in a very developed area where drilling has caused problems, but I would caution. I mean, like securing water and food and material and medicinal security is not as easy as drilling wells. It's a shortcut. The powered well acts to abstract our groundwater, and that separates groundwater from the surface and causes all kinds of like downstream impacts. And yeah, so, like, I mean, that's not to say that a well is not appropriate. It's just it depends. And I think that if there is a bunch of wells that are set up, it should be accompanied by, like, some type of offset, a mitigation. You know, you need to do some recharge works if you're going to be abstracting from the groundwater, because if you are abstracting the groundwater, you are going to be reducing natural discharge. You're going to be reducing groundwater dependent ecosystems. And it's not sustainable. Do you know what a quinault is? And I'm sure I'm not saying it right, but Q-A-N-A-T.
No, I don't. You make a really good point. That's exactly what I was thinking of when he was sharing the idea, all that stuff, and the, you know, right on point with what the issue is and why I wanted, you know, this meeting, you know, y'all to come together and maybe, like, work out more, you know, come together and just, you know, butt heads a little bit and see where we're going with that. But I don't know what the repeat that for me again. Sorry, I didn't mean that.
Well, you know, yeah. Do you know what the quinault is? A Q-A-N-A-T. They also call them dadgummit. Well, it's an old school well. I mean, like we have examples from many thousands of years ago, and it's basically a horizontal well that is punctured by access vertical shafts, and that horizontal well intersects the water table and creates, like, an artificial stream. It's a sustainable well in the sense that if there is excess groundwater, it will come out of the quinault. It'll issue forth. If the water is reduced, no more water is coming out. The reason that I'm hesitant about pumping is it makes these traditional ecologic knowledge structures like the quinault irrelevant. And so, like, if you come in and you have your powered pumping, then all of a sudden it disrespects these traditional infrastructures. And really, I think that is a big source of the solution. It's where I think we need to look, and that is traditional ecologic knowledge.
That is right on. Awesome. Yeah. Wow. It's important. And maybe, like, making those quinaults part of the, you know, the welling system that would maybe try to adopt. You know, also, as you said, it's all circumstantial. It's all everywhere. It's different. And that's kind of, like, really what we want to bridge into region network. I mean, they do have a more, like, opener kind of, like, asset basket, like, you know, for just a, like, different situations you can have, you know.
That's right. That's why I like region, and that is it lets us value water and value sequestration and value biodiversity in a locally relevant way. Now, that said, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. It's not just, I can't just go out and lease rangeland and put it under an ecological contract with Regen. There's just, I mean, I'm not far from being able to do that. There is work that needs to be done. And again, like how exactly do we connect the inputs, the work, the interventions that we make, the agroforestry, the rainwater harvesting, to outcomes? I mean, how do we measure the success of an intervention in a way that affects the value of it? And I'm really unsure as to this. Like, a remote sensing option is the best because access and real property rights cause a lot of issues in my part of the world. There's this GRACE series of satellites. It's like NASA gravitometer measurements, and they are able to take very accurate measurements of fluxes in groundwater by measuring like the change in the gravity. And a big question that I have is that data at a fine enough scale to let us connect an intervention on the ground to groundwater that's recharged so that we can quantify it and show a causal link?
All right. That's good. That should be, I mean, that could be introduced as a methodology, like in or some sort of, I know the ReefBot community is definitely looking for like ways to like analyze and get data for like that. And I mean, that's a great point. I should have put this on recording, but I'm glad, I guess, you know, Aqua, but for everyone that's new here that hasn't, you know, was expecting maybe Aqua on Juno and any sort of Juno sort of information regarding that. He actually has some personal stuff going on, urgent personal stuff. So he's not going to be here, and we're going to have to reschedule the meeting between both of us. But I mean,
we do have Eco Token here. I think it's,
yeah,
James.
I had him on here. And cool. Have you met Eco Token, right?
Yes, right. Just earlier today. And I'd encountered him in some of the discords before. Okay, and I'll let him introduce himself, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, Eco Token. Yep. Go ahead, man.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah, so I spoke with Will earlier today, and we were just chatting about some water issues. So basically, what Eco Token is aiming to do is align economic incentives with the environmental remediation project that we undertake through the generation of environmental credits. So we're talking, where my partner is the president of NOAA Water Technologies, and we've done a lot of work with treating organic matter in various types of organic waste. And so currently we're focused on manure lagoons and an organic waste runoff site that's contaminating the groundwater. And those are the first two projects we want to do. But we've also worked in oil and gas before, and oil and gas, agriculture, and mining. So mostly tailings, but yeah, that's kind of what we're all about.
Cool. And that's what caught my interest. So in my part of the world, the High Plains, we've got a lot of nitrogen contamination that comes from fertilizer. It also comes from our concentrated animal feed yard operations, or whatever they call them. And so all of these feed yards have, you know, gazillion cows pooing and peeing and whatnot, and all of that drains into a tailwater pit. And those tailwater pits are nasty. And whenever it floods, they flood. And so we get all of this nitrogen contamination in our watersheds that are actually, I mean, that are already hurting big time on the High Plains. So we have these aquifer recharge sites, or potential aquifer recharge sites. We need to make sure that the water that we do facilitate the recharge is of high enough quality. And that's what led me, in fact, to start talking with Eco Token. And I think it does relate very well back to Regen. And I would encourage all of us to collaborate, like in terms of a reach-in methodology. But also, there's other ways of coming about this problem. And so, like, EcoToken is on Solana. There's other projects that are on Solana that are not dissimilar. The one that I'm most familiar with is EcoRise.finance. And they have a utility token or something that facilitates a payment for ecosystem service marketplace. Or they will, and that's very much like regen. But then what they also want to do is to allow real property rights to be staked. And then if a regenerative project is launched, that project itself would be NFT'd. And I guess that is what would provide the initial capital. Have you thought much about NFTs in this water space, cloud and or EcoToken?
Yeah, so we actually plan on working with NFTs a fair bit. We're doing an initial launch with our Eco Warriors that are all, each one minted will offset a ton of carbon, as well as fund those projects that mentioned first ones with the manure lagoons. And then we plan on incorporating.
Mic is cutting in and out. Do you have a Bluetooth or something you can swap?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Oh, a ditto. Yeah, I've seen a number of like NFT projects where they tokenize like a specific area and or condition. And, you know, like as more carbon is sequestered or more biodiversity is there, that would somehow be reflected on the NFT. My big questions there are, what relationship does the NFT have to legal rights? Is there an actual ownership or right to use an access component? How does the change in environmental condition get reported, get measured, reported, and verified such that the NFT accurately shows, you know, this project has more or less water, more or less carbon?
Yeah. Can you hear me now? Is it working?
Much better.
Okay. I can just say for what we're doing with NFTs, it's not necessarily about the, well, they would be verified certain ones, but initially we plan to add utility to them. So for example, with our Eco Warriors, we can, I didn't mean to cut you off, Cloud. You get your hand up.
No, you go finish, because it's kind of like, it's one of those transitional ones. I'm trying to like, I had an idea for the approach in terms of like maybe at a protocol level of, designing this situation of like legal rights and trying to find, a really strong certainty and like really strong backing behind your NFTs and tokens and, there's more that I want to talk about as well, but go ahead.
Yeah, actually, I think I might have. So because there's two ways you can look at NFTs. So like what Regen Network and we would plan on doing once we're generating carbon credits would be the actual carbon credits that are tokenized would be have a parent NFT that would be associated with a project. So that would be the verification, and that would be sort of coded into the NFT and then verified on the blockchain and then tokenized. So I think that may be where you're going with NFTs. But what I was referring to is sort of the more profile picture and show off in your wallet NFT that can be used for verifying that you've offset your carbon emissions for the year. Or the top contributors to a project would get an NFT, or like our Eco Warriors. So I think they're two separate sort of things, but both serve an important role, I think, in the ecosystem.
You do bring up a good point with carbon, because like having carbon credits is a little bit more like formalized in the legal rights and stuff like that. As far as that might just be like, me guessing on that, but I feel like water is a little bit less attacked on those legal rights and less formally addressed in the scope of financial systems and stuff like that. But I was really thinking about smart contracts. And this is why I was really, really interested in learning about Juno and how a lot of when, you know, it says hashtag IBC, inter-blockchain communication, you know, and being able to utilize. There's a lot of stuff in the Cosmos that is going to be really helpful in terms of maybe communicating these protocol level like and codes to other blockchains, and maybe like sharing that value and upholding that value wherever it may be in any ecosystem or in any like sort of blockchain. So like similar to having that profile picture and stuff like that. I actually do like that idea, and like, you know, having real community members, you know, you can only get this certain NFT if you, you know, donated or if you've actually contributed. Those are all like principle.
Like, this is a great segue. So we have an NFT launch, and we are not connecting it to legal rights. We're not connecting it to any specific project. But we are trying to make a point that like property and ecosystems can be reflected in a token. It's Acre NFT, and we want to provide those to donors to our endowment, and we think we're going to do that on Stars in just a few short weeks, and very kind of curious to see how that goes. So that's like what I consider like an NFT light. It's not connected to a real property interest. It is more for show, like the Galactic Angels. Is anybody here familiar with Terra? So Angel Protocol did this big fundraise for some nonprofits shortly before the end of the year. And anybody that donated $100 or more got a Galactic Angel NFT. And those were issued, I think. I mean, mine showed up in a wallet a few days ago. It's pretty cool. And ironically, those NFTs have a pretty high market value. I mean, I think people want to be able to say, you know, they were the first to support something new, particularly if it's successful.
For everyone in the crowd, just realize, you know, contributing to solid communities is that's going to get you into something big, you know, saying just like participating in any early projects that are going on right now. That's, you know, just for everyone listening. And so, you know, I wanted to know more about, you know, how smart contracts work and, you know, CosmWasm, and because that's all Cosmos related in terms of like how, you know, what I mean, I'm pretty creative when it comes to like the idea of smart contracts. Because I feel like there's something that we could do with that in terms of like conditions and conditioning, NFTs and tokens to be, you know, delivered around the entire ecosystem in a way that is like, you know, grounded by proof and data and stuff like that. You know, those ideas I'm sharing right now kind of like will kind of maybe facilitate more ideas for any of y'all that are having projects. Maybe, you know, yeah.
I very much agree. I mean, like the revolutionary technology here is like blockchain, crypto, and smart contracts. I mean, all of these things are interrelated and very important. An example of how a smart contract can kind of revolutionize the practice in this area would be to talk about oracles. And so we have like on the IBC, we have Shamba, I think is what it's called. And Shamba is a geospatial and remote sensing oracle. And so I could pretty easily implement a smart contract that says I will pay anybody that takes, you know, more than 10 acres of desert and turns it into a forest within 10 years. And in 10 years, the Oracle is going to consult the databases and it's going to find, you know, like whatever it needs to be highly confident. And then it will say either this forest did or did not happen and the money would or would not issue. And all of that happens more or less automatically. You don't have to ask some person to come in and make a judgment. I think oracles are huge. And it concerns me because the land use and the infrastructure planners that I know of they don't have any idea what an oracle is. They may or may not know what a smart contract is, and they're skeptical of crypto. That's the biggest bridge or gap in my mind here, and that is ReFi. We've got a bunch of nerds and environmentalists and, you know, kind of this weird community, and then we have the land use decision makers, and by and large, those are separate, and we've got to bridge that gap if we're going to change anything.
That's good to like know that that's even possible, because I could see like maybe a slower approach would be to like actually hire people to go and consult and go on the ground and talk, and you know that takes a lot more, you know, effort, and I feel like that would be probably the first level of what, you know, people are going to do. If, you know, a lot of, you know, like we were talking about the other day, you know, people that are going to go want to sample and learn about the land and find the soil. And, you know, there's a lot of corporate and industry that owns a lot of this, the process to that. And I feel like we need to make a strive to maybe, I mean, there's just blockchain in itself, like maybe outsourcing this kind of stuff too, and that breaks all legal whatevers. But I do have Pepe requesting. I'm gonna go ahead and, you know, get his input on here. He's pretty cool vocal man. Let's get him up here. Go ahead, Pepe.
Hey, Cloud. How's it going?
When you're ready. It's going great. We Aqua, you know, I was we were trying to get Aqua Juno today. We can't. He's, you know, personal stuff going on, urgent personal stuff. So we're gonna reschedule that Juno talk for another time. But I want to hear some input. I know, Pepe, you got a really creative mind, really, really. So go ahead.
Well, I appreciate that. And look, I'm kind of butting in. I didn't catch the first couple minutes. I don't know how long you guys have been on, but. It's funny you said that we were trying to get some input from the Juno side, because that's kind of what I was thinking about when I was hearing about the problems you guys were trying to solve in terms of kind of automating the release of funds with regards to certain conditions being met. And obviously, I think smart contracts can achieve that. And I think a good example of how that's currently being done is obviously everything on chain. So it might not tie back to real life assets, but I'll add on to where I think there's another use case that you could kind of bridge to what Juno's doing, that if you could make some kind of hybrid model of that, that could kind of fit or address the needs that you're looking to meet with, what I understand the project is looking to do. So with the raw airdrop that's coming out, right? So what happened is they had a bunch of different criteria that would make you eligible. And what they're doing is they're building an external incentives contract that essentially will determine and will capture all of the data from the chain that occurred or that'll be kind of fed in from the snapshot data. And then that contract will essentially sift through all of that information and make sure that the fair drop is awarded to those who are eligible. So if you apply that kind of same notion where you're essentially coding conditions, and the smart contract, to my understanding, is basically that. It's just an if function where you have certain criteria and you'll have kind of an asset, obviously, that's attached to that if criteria being met in a sense, right? So when you look at whether it's land titles or deeds, essentially the main challenge is just quote unquote synthesizing them. And I'll use that word just kind of because that's where it ties into the other use case where I'm seeing kind of real world assets being basically digitalized or synthesized to be able to then be represented through ownership, but on chain. And that way what happens is you can have kind of that, I don't want to say central, but you can kind of have that community ownership through that synthesized asset, and then have that sit in a smart contract that will then require community members or participants within that project to then meet those requirements. And then at the time of the snapshot, you can then kind of feed that data, roll it up into that smart contract, and allocate whatever is meant to be allocated. Because I'm not sure I grasped the entire layout of the concept here, but. Yeah, I think, you know, looking at different projects and what's currently being done, I think you have the pieces to the puzzle kind of laid out. It's kind of just getting everyone in a room and being able to see, okay, well, what can we grab in terms of functionalities or use cases, or maybe just even pieces of codes or how they design that smart contract for that specific portion, and then finding some help and some more technically proficient people to help kind of put that together. But I think right now what's amazing with, you know, the amount of development and the amount of projects that are being launched and that are being presented on within the Cosmos environment and within IBC is that pretty much anything you can imagine in terms of how do we want to be able to...
I'm going to go ahead and let Abdallah, he had his hand up for a second to chime in. I don't want him to lose his thoughts.
Cool. Well, so yeah, two things. I very much agree with you. Like we are starting to see the tools that we need to do something. I mean, like, it's amazing how much development, how far along we've come in a relatively short period of time. The digitized assets, the tokenizing, like a token is title concept, where the property owner or the property ownership is tokenized, or rights of access and use is tokenized, is very much intriguing. One of the big projects we've seen is like Moss Earth. And that is, I think, an NFT tokenization schema that does actually acquire legal rights of use and access and conservation obligations in the Amazonia. It's a little tricky here in the United States because every state has a somewhat different approach to private property concepts. Now, I think this creates an opportunity for us in Texas because it's almost entirely private property. And that means we're seeing a lot of extraction and diminishment of value. But if we can connect the value of the land to the value of its ecological health, then I think we can reverse that. And at least here, we don't have to deal with permitting or dealing with governmental agencies, which is very difficult.
That leads me to talk about, you know, being an ambassador, some sort of, you know, and in some sort of sense, you know, I mean, that's something that I'm thinking about. I mean, I'm literally living, my landlord owns this giant piece of land to the left of me right here. I could see a giant field that they just kind of, they've burnt off. They've, you know, for me personally, it's lost some sort of, you know, ecological value. That's in my heart. And I wanted to tell my landlord that I have. I've messaged them and I'm sure they're thinking about it. You know, it's Texas. You know, a lot of people are aware of the capabilities and going in and talking about that. I mean, I literally try to talk about this crypto stuff with people around me. And it's like, you know, one in ear, one out the other, because it just doesn't, you know, none of what I'm saying is like relevant to their lives, or they're not familiar with hardly anything, any terminology I'm using. But, you know, that's I feel like a lot of, especially in Texas, like you said, it's privately owned. And I, just tying the assets and, you know, that has been a question and an initiative in the back of my mind for such a long time to quantify a lot of this in a proof, like a proof way. Like, you know, this is proof that your land has a potential to be ecologically, you know, regenerative and actually gain income from, you know, earn income from it. And also, you know, there's in implementing design and stuff has always been my kind of like, you know, idea, maybe like having this, you know, your land being NFT and just different, like, you know, design, adding the design onto it. Go ahead, Eco Token. I'm just kind of shilling.
Oh, hey. No, sorry. I totally agree with you. I was actually, that was when I raised my hand when you were talking about how to get these people that aren't familiar with the blockchain involved. And I think it's all about solving a problem for them. So I think if you're to approach, say, a farmer and say that through ReFi, I've found a way that we can solve this problem for you at no cost, then I don't think they need to understand anything about blockchain, smart contracts, or anything. We just have a problem that we're solving for them. And then as that begins to happen more and more, and then we're able to generate environmental credits and earn them new revenue sources, I think that that's when they'll be pounding, knocking on our doors, trying to get more involved. So I think that it's more of an economic incentive to a lot of these landowners.
It's almost like a job position, you know, like an ambassador or a you want to call it a salesman. I don't even like using that word, but in a sense, it's kind of like, you know, I almost like feel like going door to door to farm or farm to farm to just like, you know, share this information with people. But
we're trying to,
we're
trying to educate our land users out here about this very thing. Like, I mean, and they all want to increase revenue and increase the value of their holdings. The problem I've encountered is the promise of future crypto is of very little value relative to a check in hand. And so, like, we've got these traditional contract buyers making offers for sequestration contracts of rangeland and of farmland. And they're offering a check. And it's just we got to make the crypto usable in order for that to be of persuasive value to our land users, I think.
Yeah, I think that if you popularized individuals and corporations to offset their environmental impacts on chain, then you can give them that monetary reward because you're able to sell the credits generated on chain, and then you can pay them in any currency you want. You could just cash out and pay them in fiat right to their bank account if you wanted to. But it's about generating that market for people to want to buy those credits, I think. Or another option would be to get the protocols, to lobby governments in order to get the protocols to a point where they would be considered compulsory, and then they'd sell for about four times as much.
I don't
see much value in a political solution. The people that hold office in my district will fight carbon sequestration and climate change to the death, man. But that's because, like, our governments are funded by petrodollars. I mean, like, literally, our county governments take out bonds on the value of future oil and gas production. Okay. And so if that's not valuable, then they're up shit's creek. It's just, I don't have much faith in a political solution here.
I'm almost contrary to, I just feel a little bit contrary to that, because just based off of, like, you know, I mean, I like to talk about the Green Party. It has been relevant before, and it's very, very controlled by, you know, liberal, like, left, like, very far left, and it has a lot of, but there's, you know, as in terms of, like, you know, because as Democratic, you know, very liberal left, they have a lot of power in the politic, but it's not always, you know, I mean, what I'm saying is, you know, the Green Party has almost become aware, and it has died off a little bit, but there is a platform for this type of stuff, you know, very progressive stuff. And, you know, I know that there are, it's a tough choice to make, and there's a good reason to have a little faith for these kinds of things, especially in Texas. But if you look at, I mean, for example, Dallas has, there's initiatives going to greening and stuff. And, you know, that, I mean, that might not even be a good reason, but you do have a good point. But I mean, I feel like
there is reason for optimism. And there, it's hard to feel that in Amarillo. We're a long ways from Dallas and Austin and the more, I guess, the liberal metropolises.
Got you. But, yeah. No, I'm at Paris right now, and, you know, it's pretty, pretty there. And I mean, there is, I like Paris because it's a smaller town and people are a little bit more, I guess they're just a little bit, I don't know. It's a different kind of feeling, you know, a small town, more having big players. Yeah.
We got Pepe.
Well, I just want to butt in because I think, you know, I have an idea that kind of bridges both of your points, because you both make valid points, both on the side of saying, well, we want as little government intervention as possible. But at the same time, as Cloud was saying, like, we kind of need to have at least some form of representation on city councils and municipal levels, or at least local government levels, just so we can be able to incentivize that through, you know, tax breaks or whatever. And I think where I see that bridging is kind of going back to what Cloud was saying, where, like, we need to be able to have communities be part of the development of this type of project, wherein they're pushing for that that same kind of idea, or those same kind of incentives, or those same kind of regulations to be pushed, but at a local level. And where I see that being possible and not even being that much party related is, at the end of the day, I think we're seeing a massive shift of that political power coming back to more local and regional levels. And I think that that's a shift that's happening more specifically, or more noticeably, I would say, right now in the Midwest and in the Bible Belt and even in Texas, where people are kind of realizing that at the end of the day, yes, you can we elect representatives, but we can still be part of that discussion process. So if we have, or if you're able to kind of set up this entity, whereas it's maybe in the form of a foundation, that then kind of can advocate through community members that are, you know, behind this project and behind these ideas, I think you can really sell this idea to any political representative from any party, whereas, you know, the community is really strongly, you know, pushing their belief that this is a net benefit for everyone involved, which I think at the end of the day it is, right? Because these are massive issues, and I think right now they're both hot political issues in terms of political capital. So look, we're trying to help, you know, with the ecological side of things, and I think that's just a popular opinion no matter what side you're on. Like, I agree that there are obviously bigger and deeper pockets coming in from, you know, the more maybe conservative side, or if you look at Texas from the big oil money. But at the end of the day, even oil right now is moving into more ecological reporting, third bottom line reporting. So they're even more looking to diversify their portfolio so that they're a little less exposed to these types of market crashes or this type of manipulation. Because at the end of the day, I don't think oil is going anywhere, but they need to be able to make room and not just have every political decision be based on petrodollars, because then they're going to shun, you know, a big part of the market.
Let's talk about oil. So it, in the Permian Basin, it takes about 7+ gallons of water to produce one barrel of oil. And so a big bottleneck on their ability to produce oil is, what do they do with the produced water? The solution to date has been injected in these big subterranean reservoirs.
Send it to Flint, Michigan.
Yeah. Well, they would if they had the infrastructure. But it's become a big bottleneck. Getting rid of this produced water, it's a big cost, and it's growing. And so it's been causing these earthquakes. And so there's a lot of regulatory attention here. And so what I'm getting at is, there's a lot of money and interest in the Permian Basin into figuring out what can they do with produced water. And this is one of the things I talked about with EcoToken, is if you can make it safe to release that produced water back into a watershed, or, you know, to use it for like hydrophilic plants or whatever, I think there's oil and gas companies that would pay for it.
Yeah, you would be surprised. They don't seem to be that motivated to solve the issue. At least they definitely weren't at $40 to $50 oil. They may very well be now at $95 oil though. So it might be time to reach back out to those companies and see if they're ready to make that move yet.
Okay. I like the conversation where we're at, and I want to kind of keep IBC, you know, idealism, and I want to ask EcoToken: Have you ever heard of EVMOS, and have ever thought about, like, you know, are you familiar with EVMOS and the EVM bridging into Cosmos?
No, I haven't actually. I just know about Regen on the Cosmos network, but I haven't heard of EVMOS.
So this is going to be should be really helpful in terms of, like, maybe, you know, getting into those spaces through, because I'm going to go ahead and post it on up on here on the board. I have your a tweet from you up here on the board, but Evmos is a next gen Ethereum virtual machine hub on Cosmos. So this is going to be like our, you know, your transition into, and it has, it's a virtual, it's an EVM based thing. So it's not like you're bridging, making this bridge thing. It's going to, you know, it's going to be a little bit more easier, more efficient to work inside of the Cosmos ecosystem. As far as I know, I mean, I'm not like, you know, there's tons of things that I'm looking at all the time, and I'm always, you know, I still sometimes I don't have time to look into things, but I feel like Evmos can be something, maybe a tool for you to be involved in, say, regen. I mean, that could be a great method of trying to get involved with regen and maybe getting more different areas of influence, and I just wanted to kind of make that point and share that with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll definitely check that out. That is that the Moss credit? Is that the same thing?
No. Oh, okay. It's not. I'm gonna find a helpful tweet by Evmos to share up here. Just because, you know, I'd be yeah. But I wanted to, and I didn't mean to sidetrack this the conversation of where we were at, but because it is where we are doing a good job, and I'm so kind of like, man, I didn't think about recording. I didn't even think about hitting record because I was actually putting up, like, I was doing this chicken coop thing, and I was looking at my, and I got my phone, got to my phone, and it was late. It was 2:25. I'm like, no, but I'm so happy and grateful that, you know, we're here and making amazing progress, because the stuff that we're talking about is, you know, we still have time to kind of see what this technology is going to do. And I think it's up to us, because I didn't record it maybe, but it might be up to us to spread these ideas, or just spread this, the planted seeds of this conversation into wherever we are, because I mean, that is the ultimate goal, is to just collaborate and ease this process, you know, of just helping humanity and connecting together and connecting, you know, working together.
Yeah, for sure. And thanks so much for having us. It's I think Spaces is a fantastic tool for that. So, yeah, happy to hop on one anytime with you guys.
Yeah, let's do it again. Thank you very much, everybody. I appreciate it. Cool. Reach out if y'all want to talk to us anymore, and buy an Acre NFT when the time comes, and support EcoToken.
Have you tweeted anything about your Acres on Twitter?
Not recently, but we're about to.
Okay. What chain are you launching on? Oh, sorry.
Stars. We think at least Stars come March 2nd. Yeah, and so we got a very brief window here, but the art and all that stuff's already done. It's just interesting. The NFT market is weird.
Yeah.
Well, it's an infancy, right? So I mean, art, digital art is a good kind of bootstrapping use case to just kind of show how, you know, I think it's a good place to start in terms of risk. And then as we move towards more real world assets, at least we'll have risk to capital more on JPEGs and stuff. So I think Stars is looking really good. And if there's any way to kind of, you know, pencil in a link with what Secret's doing in terms of privacy, that would be super interesting as well. Not that necessarily privacy is the goal, but I think that's always something interesting to keep
in mind. I think privacy is very important here. We really like Secret also. And so I do like that comment. Anyway.
Yep. That sounds good. I mean, I want to kind of see what people from the audience want. Have they have any questions from the audience, just to ask, you know, any of us, any questions? Maybe we're just here to soak it in. Just go ahead and request to speak if you want to have any questions. If y'all were a little late, you know, we'll be having, I mean, there's just tons of, we went over tons of stuff, but, you know, there's going to be an overlying concept, you know, taking it downstream. And I feel like there's going to be more of this. Of course, we still need to have Aqua and Juno coming down here and sharing some stuff. And we also do need to share our insights. You know, that's why I wanted to bring them together, you know, with the drilling and maybe some, maybe concerns on that side, because he was really excited. And, you know, where excitement comes, folly happens, and we don't want to get caught in any long-term situations and in just having knowledge in general.
That's right. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. And like our current water infrastructure, which is failing us, was built by people that were trying to do good. And the reality is, it's just really complicated. What's different about our generation is we have these tremendous computational tools that we can bring to bear, and we have this technology that we can bring to bear, and we can communicate globally. And so I do think that we're getting these novel tools just in the nick of time.
It's a beautiful thing with the timing. I do believe in synchronicity and the master plan that we all have that is happening. You know, I mean, just in time is one of the things that I like to say, as it's like this movie that is all black and white. The world has turned black and white, and then all of a sudden the wave of color just comes through and just washes over the black and white. And it's just, that's what important, that's, you know, that's the process. And I feel like, you know, different, as they're coming out with NFTs, artists can utilize their art talent to represent what the initiatives that we speak of and the initiatives that are there, you know, refi, sequestration of, you know, land, water, anything, you know, it's possible. And it's now, you know, the more we become aware of it, the more possible it seems.
Cool. Thank you, Cloud, for doing this. Let's do it again. I got to run and talk to somebody else in refi. I really appreciate it. Adios, everybody.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Good news. All right.
Bye, everybody. Thanks for having us.
Cheers, yes, sir.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was Taking It Downstream, Water, Crypto, and Boots on the Ground, recorded on Tuesday, February 22nd, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the lunatic community. Follow Orbital Command on Twitter using the link in the show notes to receive regular threads on Terra protocols and yield strategies, news, resources, and Twitter space discussions. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Luart. Luart is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. Luart provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. Terra Spaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Reading in a book, yo, I learned something nifty. The CIA was feeding people acid in the 50s. Some people knew it, most of them didn't. It was like a little game they invented. Sandoz had the plug, it was all about the research. Gotta get turned on, hollering me first. Government reaction is always kinda knee-jerk. Not exactly what I like to see out of my leaders. Zen lunatics trying to see the other side. Everybody likes to hide and seek when the dose is high. Paranoid, like, people are watching me. Well, that's because people are watching, see? If DMT is the Niagara of epiphanous beauty, and psilocybin treats your mind like a movie, LSD wasn't the mind control they wanted, so they kept designing and different drugs to haunt us.
You are an explorer, and you represent our species. And the greatest good you can do is to bring back a new idea, because our world is endangered by the absence of good ideas. Our world is in crisis because of the absence of consciousness.
Just another another night in the cabin, camping. Three drops hitting each tongue like, well, that happened. Feeling like a weird alien on this planet. I'm just passing through, staring at these inhabitants. They didn't know provocateurs infiltrating, lock your doors, trying to start a quiet riot so they could mop the floors. Used to slay the forage, waiting for the drum roll. And that's what happens when cutthroats get all the control. Acting all manic, the passion is frantic. The visuals are magic, so let your mind brandish this little weapon of mass dysfunction. Red Dawn down, now we're tripping with the Russians. Reading in a book, yo, I learned something nifty. The CIA was feeding people acid in the 50s. Some people knew it, most of them didn't. And you wonder why we harbor such resentment, dicks.
My notion of what the psychedelic experience is for is that we each must become like a fisherman and go out onto the dark ocean of mind and let your nets down into that sea. And what you're after is not some behemoth that will tear through your nets, follow them, and drag you and your little boat, you know, into the abyss. Nor are what we're looking for a bunch of sardines that can slip through your net and disappear. Ideas like, have you ever noticed that your little finger exactly fits your nostril? And stuff like that.
Channel Spaces.